Hello and welcome to Vague and Unconvincing, a pop culture podcast. I'm your host, Wimp, and thank you for joining me. It's been a while. Good to be back again. Got a lot to talk about pop culture-wise, but before I start, just want to spin a little yarn for a few seconds. And I hope you will indulge me. It's one of the main reasons I wanted to get an episode out. Now, I'm quite old, so my previous job, I worked for 9 years for a charity. I worked for the Muscular Dystrophy Association, and for most of my time there, I always worked the Jerry Lewis Telethon on Labor Day. And although I live in Albany, New York, my telethon territory was up in Vermont. So part of my job was helping to put the telethon together in Burlington, Vermont. So the first year we did the show, I got to meet with the hosts and their anchors for the newscast, the local newscast that they do. And we also had a co-host who had a form of muscular dystrophy. And his name was Joel Senesak. He was diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, and he had been the co-host for the telethon for many years. He was he started when he was in his teens, and he had been doing it up until the telethon was last aired. I would say about maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I believe is what it was. So he was in his 30s when they were doing that. So now there are kind of people who you meet in your life who can kind of make you re-examine things that you take for granted. And Joel was one of those people. Now, I play the saxophone, and I had stopped playing for about 14 years until Joel and I were just sitting talking about jazz for some reason, and he said that he used to play, but the disease kind of made it difficult, so he could no longer do it. So after meeting him and talking to him about that, I kind of went home, and it just kind of stuck in my head, and you know, that you shouldn't let the little things in life kind of slip away. So right after that, I joined the Colony Town Band afterwards, and I've been playing with them ever since. I would say it was like maybe 6 or 7 months after we had that. We had that in September. I think I joined the band. I played in the Rotterdam Town Band in the summer, that next summer, and then in that spring, or that fall, I should say, I joined the Colony Town Band. So. And I've been with them ever since. So that's been a good 8 or 9 years, something like that, that I played that band. But, you know, he kind of taught me that, you know, don't let these small things in life slip away. You know, we take these things for granted, and, you know, we shouldn't overlook them, because someday they, you know, they could be gone. And Joel taught me that, and I am forever grateful. And as a stark contrast to the disease that was to his body, his spirit and his personality were flawless, except for the fact that he liked the Red Sox, which you know, I kind of forgive him for that. But every time I sit down to play, I think of Joel. He inspired me all the time, so I jump at the opportunity to tell people why I started playing again, and you know, and I get to talk about Joel some more, so it's always a good thing. So, raise your glass if you're having a drink, or if saying a prayer is your thing. Please say one for Joel. Rest in peace, my friend. I hope your life was far too short, but it certainly was full. Now, I don't really have an idea how to properly transition, so I'm just going to go with it. So, in movie news, some studios issued some upcoming release dates. IndieWire is reporting that Bond 25 is being delayed by 2 months, initially set for a Valentine's Day release. It's now looking at Easter. And Dune was given a November 2020 release date. And I'll get Dune a little bit later than that, but with a bunch of casting announcements recently. lately. So we'll talk a little bit more about that too. Fast and Furious 9 was pushed to Memorial Day in 2020. And I have to admit, I've never seen a Fast and Furious movie, so I'm not really sure I want to either. But, you know, if that's your thing, go for it. I'm recording this fresh off of Star Wars Celebration. It was a couple weeks ago, and then we got a teaser, we got a title. And let me preface by saying it's not cheap to go to Celebration. And I made every effort to cut corners. I flew in off days, 2 days before, 1 day after, to get a cheaper, you know, airline flight cost. I stayed at a hotel by Midway Airport, which saved me about maybe $100 a night on my hotel room. It included breakfast, so I didn't have to eat that or pay for that. You know, I had to, you know, it was still really expensive. So just beware if you're going to go. You're going to drop some coin on that. I would suggest getting a lot of people to go with you. You can get four people in a room if you have that. But, you know, introverts like myself go solo. So like that. You know, I kind of preferred the fact that there was a two-year gap between the two. And at the end of Celebration, they announced that 2020 is going to be happening in Anaheim. The amount of money that they made, I'm not surprised that they would continue doing Celebration. There was always a theory like, hey, they don't want this headache, they don't want that. But the amount of money they made, you know, everybody going into the store was dropping like $250, $300, $400 a pop. And that line was packed the entire time. You know, there was never not a huge line to that. They even got virtual queuing down to where you didn't have to wait in line. You could go in and, like, you know, 10 minutes you'd be in the store buying your stuff, and it was still amazing amount of money that they had. So I prefer the two-year gap. I probably won't go to Anaheim, but I certainly will watch the feeds. I'm also on the feeds in the closing ceremonies. I'm the second person who gets the card handed after Jen hands it off to the crowd. It goes, she handed it to one guy, he handed it to me, and I passed it on. So I did make the feed. But I went to a lot of panels this year, which was different, which I didn't do before, as many as I could get in. And since there were none on day one, I, like many other people, spent the day in line for the store. But other than that, you just kind of looked at the cosplay, kind of roamed the halls, saw what was going on. It's really overwhelming when you first get there, especially all the people that are in line who get there early to get in line. Cancer Boy here had his medical pass, so I didn't have to wait in a huge line, but I did jump it somewhat. If you can do that, not get cancer, but if you can get the jump liner badge, you know, certainly pay for that, or if you have an issue, a medical issue, which will get you one, that's a nice thing too. Now, there was a lot of after celebration events going on too, but I was by the airport, so I had about an hour commute way every day, so I never really hung around and did any of those. I'm sure they would have been nice. I'm more of an introvert, so I don't mingle too well. I mean, I can sit there and talk your ear off about Star Wars, but to get to that point where you just start talking about Star Wars is kind of an issue for me. I'm just, you know, a quiet guy, kind of keeps to himself. So I got there two nights before Celebration started, so I'd have a full day in Chicago. I was on the subway line, so I took the subway. I went to the Bean. I went to the Modern Museum of, or the Art Museum of Chicago, I believe it's called. And that was absolutely amazing. I'm not much of an art fan myself, but when you're looking at a Monet and you see these big gobs of paint, but you take two steps back and this whole painting comes into focus, you're like, my God, you really can appreciate the talent that these artists have when you see the the paintings in front of you. After that, I went to a Cubs game. I went to Wrigley. It was freezing, very cold. The Cubs fans are a lot like Red Sox fans. So I didn't enjoy Wrigley that much. But I went to a game there. I went to a Sox game on day five after the closing ceremony, which was a little bit nicer. It was maybe upper 40s, 50s, but Chicago weather is weird because it's like really windy, and the cold is mixed in with that air. So I mean, even if it's 50 degrees, you're still feeling 40 because that cold wind. So I watched the game. I was on field level. I was right on the third baseline, towards the outfield. And sitting behind me was I had three African American guys right behind me who were just hilarious, and something that's the most fun I've ever had at a baseball game. I wish I could, I wish I kept in contact with those guys. Say, when I'm back, I'm going with you guys. So I'm like, I went in thinking like I'm a Yankee fan. This team sucks. The Royals suck too. But I left. I bought a Sox hat. I had that much fun at the game. It was really great and a great experience. And I totally judge sports team by their fans. If I'm near good fans and I have a positive experience, I end up liking the team. I'm looking at you, Philly, because you were horrible in Hartford. So, digressing again. But this year, celebration changed queuing for the panels, and the main panels were all lottery. So there was no overnight lines. This angered some hardcore fans because then they could not argue that they were better fans than you because they stayed overnight. So I'm totally in favor of these lotteries. Look, I wasn't camping out overnight, so there's no way I'd make these panels. My luck being as it is, it's the only lottery I've won so far was the cancer lottery. So of course I did not win the episode 9 lottery. I watched the panel and the trailer from the friendly confines of the Star Wars show live stage. Now all that complaining I did about the cost of celebration, it was worth it. It was worth every penny because you're watching this panel, and I was in this room with thousands of people who just shared the same passion as I do, and the way these movies affects them. It affects me the same way. So if you go on my Twitter feed, it's @TheWim. I posted a video of the room watching the trailer live. I was watching it too, but I just kind of had like my phone pointed at the crowd. So like I just holding on to it, not paying attention. I was watching the trailer and just the reactions that were happening. It's just, it was great. It's when you hear Palpatine's laugh and the title reveal, everybody in that room, is just going nuts and feels the same way as me. And as per usual, they didn't reveal much. They just kind of showed you what they wanted you to see. Here's what we do know, though. Anakin's lightsaber is back in one piece. Kylo fixed his helmet and looks really pissed. Lando was still a pimp. Endor looks a mess. Looks like downtown Detroit there. And, seeing Leia made me a mess. And then Palpatine laughed and title reveal, it was great. What can I say about it? Now, I do have a theory about, the title and what the movie's going to be about. And I was hanging on to this. This is totally original. I'm the only one who's thinking of this. This is going to be great, right? And then, like, I listened to Kevin Smith the next morning say exactly what I was thinking. So, let me go over it. Let's look at the wording. The title is Rise of Skywalker. Now, I think the idea is that the teaching and training Rey does is a new form of Jedi, a Skywalker, so to speak. Now, they follow the path of Luke. They tread the dark side, but are good. I guess you call them kind of a gray Jedi. it would also resolve story and wrap up all nine movies kind of into a neat bundle. Like, for example, let me tell you the story of the Skywalker, how the Skywalker Jedi was born. Well, you see, it started with a broken system. A Jedi came along through unorthodox circumstances and destroyed the order. His son came along and redeemed his father and tried to reinstitute the old ways. In trying to do so, the order is once again destroyed, whereas the son left to never allow this to happen again. And after a few years, a new student seeking to learn his ways sought him out, only to be turned away when all that was good and was about to be lost. Now, the son gave his life to allow the Jedi to be reborn as to what it is today, to be known as the Skywalkers. And if you look at, well, 1 through 9, all these can come together and form that. With a nice cohesive storyline that kind of, allowances to be made for future movies to come out of that, other than not having anything to do with the nine movies except for how Skywalker Jedi came to be. It makes sense to me as a way to continue stories without having to involve those nine movies. So technically, Rey is a Skywalker now, and they can make movies with her, just her story, her fins, or pose, or whatnot. They can do whatever, without having to go back to this like kind of prequel area, what you would say. Makes sense, right? I like it. I also think everything in that trailer kind of just shows, what takes place in the first act of the movie. I think they've kind of like made that happen recently, where they're not delving too far away from the beginning of the storyline, just because they don't want to give away too much. That would be kind of like par for the course for the way Lucasfilm has been running this prequel, or not prequel, but post trilogy goings on. Now, day three brought us The Mandalorian. Now, the direct-to-streaming series will drop later this year, and now this is a panel I did win. So I was present in the Wintrust Arena when this went down. I kind of started off with Kathleen Kennedy, Dave Filoni, and Jon Favreau. They waited. Added some cast members, some Pedro Pascal, Gina Carano, and Carl Weathers, who came out and started doing Apollo Creed. After a 40-minute panel, they went dark to streaming and showed in the arena. I think they did it on the Star Wars show stage and then other streaming stages. A behind-the-scenes reel that they were prepping. I'm guessing that this was what they showed the Disney shareholders, and then they came back and talked a little more, and then closed the panel. They said it went dark, and after it went dark, people started leaving, and Favreau's like, "Where are you going? You think we're not going to show you something here?" And then so they showed us like the first 5 or 10 minutes of the first episode. And I'll give you a kind of quick rundown of what I remember. There's obviously much more scenery-wise, but it seemed like they started out on a planet like Tatooine. Pedro Pascal shows up as the Mandalorian. He never takes off his helmet, so you never see his face. But he meets with Carl Weathers' character, whom that's where he gets most of his bounties from. And Carl Weathers says he has a client that's looking for someone and they need the best. And he kind of infers the fact that since Boba has been gone, there's kind of like, there's not a great bounty hunter since then. So he sends a Mandalorian. So he kind of, he goes on his way and says, okay, I'll meet with him type of thing. And then he kind of does a walkthrough through a Mos Eisley's type of city. And he walks by this one. There's this one scene where they have guys working a barbecue, and he's barbecuing a Kowakian monkey lizard. with another in the cage, of like right next to the grill, like watching them being barbecued. And it's interesting that Salacious Crumb is a walking monkey lizard. So I'm thinking like the, you know, Favreau is sitting down going like, all right, if I ever get the chance, I'm gonna barbecue that thing and make another watch while they do it. But that was a good scene. I mean, the crowd cheered when that happened. So he walks by that and he goes to the client who's hiring him, and it turns out it's an emperor, the Empire. It's a couple, they're wearing their emperor uniforms, a couple of stormtroopers in there, and initially the Mandalorian kind of freaks out a little bit. And you know, it does one of those, everybody pulls their weapons and, you know, everybody's getting shot, you know, it's kind of like a Pulp Fiction type of thing. And then they calm down and you know, get down to business. And you know, the Empire people there, I was under the impression that some people in the theater knew who they were and what characters they were, but I had no idea who they are. I think they were new characters to me. But they say they're looking for somebody who's been gone for about 30 years, which would make it around, that takes place 2 years, probably around Clone Wars. That would be a Clone Wars character that's disappeared that they're looking for, that they haven't had for 30 years. They never show you who it is, so we don't really know. And they just kind of say like, we don't have many clues, but if you're the best, you'll find this person. And then kind of that's where it ends. You know, and then they run after that. They ran the behind-the-scenes footage again, just so we had a chance to process things and try to, you know, figure out what we saw, just like we always do in these type of panels that we see when they reshow it again too. So in the behind-the-scenes footage, they do a little bit. They show Geena fighting. They show the IG-88 type droid firing a blaster, and how he works is his head and his arms are stationary, but his torso rotates, firing blaster bolts. So that was really cool. You know, crowd went nuts when he came on. You know, it didn't have the same feel as the Episode 9 trailer did, but you know, it felt really good addition to the universe. You know, I kind of equated the same feeling as you were watching the Endgame trailer and then watching maybe Daredevil featurette. They're both really cool, but one is on a little bit of a different level than the other. I'm not saying it's bad or anything, but you know, it just had a feel of a television show. You know, and again, that being said, take my money now. I've also been watching Resistance, the Star Wars animated series, which has a lot of the same vibes that Rebel characters, the show Rebels had character-wise, but it, to me, it's just obvious that this is made for kids. You know, I understand that every Star Wars film is supposedly made for a 12-year-old, but it was never really noticeable as it is for the cartoons. It's funny when I watch it. So, Star Wars, no complaints here, no major complaints here, but I didn't attend the listeners. One of the best panels I did go to was a breakdown of the Phantom Menace music that was hosted by David W. Collins. Now, he hosts a podcast called The Soundtrack Show, and I've been catching up on that. It's really good, and he breaks down all the different themes for all the different characters that John Williams introduced in the original trilogy, how they refer to themselves in the prequel music. One mind-blowing piece was when he was going through the celebration track at the end of the Phantom Menace film, not known to seeming everyone, the happy, fun, dancing piece is actually the Emperor's theme played in a major key. He described it as a party time, unbeknownst that they just elected the Sith Lord to be their president. Awesome stuff. That was a great panel. I hope they would do that again at future ones, because I think next year would be, what, 30 years for Return of the Jedi, right? Maybe 35? Or if it was 40. No, it would be 40 years for Empire Strikes Back, if that's the case. So maybe you can break down music for that once again. And, you know, a great panel. Another good panel was kind of a deconstruction of the cantina scene, breaking down all the actors, some of which are not even known. He tells them apart by their footwear and all this other stuff, and how he finds out who played whom and who played what, and how multiple people played multiple things, and how it was shot at two different locations at two different times when they wanted to expand a little bit. The more stuff he knows, it expands every year. So even if you see it, like if you go to Celebration next year and the panel is there, it'll be a slightly different panel than the previous one, just as the more information that he always finds. I did go to the Phantom Menace 20th Anniversary panel, which was very underwhelming, but it was a fun panel nonetheless. We got to give our props to Ahmad Best, let him know that people who make threats against him and treat him poorly are not part of the Star Wars fandom as we like ended it. So it was good to see that. I just had a great time going. I suggest everyone go if they have a chance, if you're a huge Star Wars person, you know. The first time I went to 2 years ago, I didn't go to many panels, but I did this year. I made as many as I could, and like I said, it can be overwhelming when you get there, but, you know, just work through it a little bit, relax, walk around a little bit the first day, get your lay of the land. That's what I did, know where all the panels were going to be, so I could go from one to the other without getting lost, and kind of figure things out where everything was. That's what I did the first time, so, and you know, I went by myself, too, and I had a great time. So do it. You know, you can watch all the panels on the Star Wars YouTube channel. And, you know, that was literally what I would do after I got back from, after I got back to my hotel. I would just go back to my room and watch the panels again. So it was great. It was a great time. So, on a different front, there's been a lot of Dune news since my last update with a full cast, and we have Oscar Isaac is playing Dooku, Jason Momoa is Zendaya, and Timothy Chalamet will be playing Paul Atreides. Hans Zimmer has been confirmed to compose the score with Denis Villeneuve set to direct. I can't be more excited about this. Dune was one of the first sci-fi books I ever read, so it kind of hooked me into reading a lot more. So I hope they're properly able to capture the magic of the books into the movie. I'm very hopeful on that. Captain Marvel came out since my last update. You know, I liked that movie. I liked there wasn't a love story aspect about it. That was a very good piece. It was kind of missing a little of the magic that Wonder Woman had. There was no matching scene to the French scene in that. So comparing the two, in my slightly biased DC opinion, Wonder Woman still has the edge. But, if you're a fanboy getting pissed off about, movie companies just making female minority movies, just stop. Judge the movie on its own merits. I don't mind that, as long as the story is good. Comics have always pushed those boundaries, so it shouldn't be any different in the movies if they follow suit like that. I also briefly saw an article about the Marvel Netflix shows being rebooted. I don't remember where I saw that, but when they're released from the Netflix contract. I didn't read it all, so I didn't get the full gist of the story, but it would make sense. And since we are on the Marvel train, with the Fox-Disney deal coming to a close, Am I the only one who thinks that they made this deal just because Kevin Feige wanted the X-Men? I mean, he just made them, you know, billions and billions of dollars on not only movie stuff, but, you know, the toys that were related to it, you know, the comics and which they own, and all that stuff together. How much of a fortune that he's made them that they could drop $60 billion and buy a company just for him because he wants to kind of circle the wagons and get everything back together, you know. I want to see a Disney Marvel X-Men movie. Maybe somehow make a decent Fantastic Four movie. Get those characters in. I think I heard on a podcast previously that they suggested that start with the Silver Surfer and work your way in, which was kind of, you know, a good idea. You know, Fantastic Four movies kind of make Green Lantern look good. So, now I posed this question previously. After the success of Aquaman, the upcoming release of Birds of Prey and the Joker movie and Wonder Woman 1980, where does DC go from here? You know, I propose making a bunch of these one-offs, then at a later date, kind of like Return to Justice Leagues. You know, the first Justice League was just too quick and too forced. Now, you know, give me some Flash movie, give me a Superman movie, give me another Batman movie, give me a decent Green Lantern, and then throw them all together. Let it naturally work that way. So, you know, DC has Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. Come on, man. You can't get a decent story out of that? Let's do it, you know? I also, you know, going in that same Marvel sense type of area, back to Marvel, I also had the pleasure to add an additional voice to the Sci-Fi Puffcast episode regarding Avengers Endgame. Thanks for having me on, Joel. I appreciate it. I'm glad I was included, with the exception of my network going down multiple times. It was fun. Just in my review, very satisfying film. There was some pacing issues that I think it has. It felt kind of slow in the first like hour, and especially when you're sitting there for three, you know, you're kind of like, ah, come on, let's move along, type of thing. But it was certainly a good resolution for the original six, and I want to see where they're going next. I'm interested in which characters are going to bring the franchise into a new direction. It'd be good. Netflix has started to turn the page on Marvel being gone and released the first of their comic book offerings with the Umbrella Academy. I must admit, good stuff. It was a fun watch, and I was pleasantly surprised. I think it wasn't going to be watchable or anything like that. It just looked like a bad comic book off that they're trying to push through, but decent, you know. On that note, with Netflix bringing in some new material, they have to, and it seems like with the recent raising prices, you have to wonder if Netflix is kind of worth its cost. You know, going up a dollar and then another few months going up another dollar per month. You know, see the price point of Disney Plus at like $7, you know, I can see them losing a lot of people. You know, myself included, certainly going to give it a thought whether or not to keep it. Tread lightly, Netflix, you know, because I'm certainly getting Disney Plus the day it comes out, or the day it's available. I could also spend, you know, a whole episode just talking about Game of Thrones. Maybe I'll do something after the series concludes, because I'm one of those people that read the books first. So, you know, I always judge it based upon that, you know, my knowledge of what happened in the books. But, future episodes, maybe an in-depth look at it. I love the character development. I will say this about the new season, or the last season, I should say, that episode two with all the characters and how they were developed and brought in was really good job. They did a good job with that. There's no action in that episode, but it was still really good. Now tonight is episode 3, where we know the White Walkers catch up with Winterfell. So, as I'm speaking, die. That's going to be a rough episode. So we'll talk about that. But again, Vague and Unconvincing is brought to you by Stephanie's Country Panelist. Now, if you were at Celebration, I was handing these out to people. Special made the 4th candles, which I made for a wedding, so I made some extras and handed them out as gifts to people. If they were handing me stickers or we were chatting and talking to them all day, I would just give them one and say, hey, I'm not using them that way. I can claim them with taxes. And so, but they're all hand poured by myself and my wife, and so, peruse our different fragrances at StephaniesCountryCandles.com. That's StephaniesCountryCandles.com. So long no talk. I hope you enjoyed the episode. I did go clocking over 36 minutes, so that should be good so far. So my personal Twitter account is at TheWim. The show is at UnvaguedPod, or on Facebook.com/VagueAndUnconvincing, or you can send me an email at VagueAndUnconvincing@gmail.com. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon, and we'll get another episode out at some point. So, stay real, my geek friends. We'll talk to you soon.